Okay. I'm trying to. This isn't really going to work, right? I'm just losing my voice. So I'm trying to. If you can hear me, please let me know. You can hear everybody, right? What? I know the mic works, but then I have to stand here leaning over. It makes me uncomfortable. Okay. Okay. Today's going to be a little different than previous because we're not going to talk about only one person. I want to make a bigger point about halacha and the development of halacha and how we got to a certain stage in halacha. So till now, we've done, you know, Rashi, the 1000s, Ramban, the 1100s. I'm sorry, Rambam, the 1100s, Ramban, 1200s. The Rush is next, but the Rush can't exist on his own. The Rush is a Talmud of the Maharam Meirutenberg. That's the first name up there, who lived from 1215 to 1293. Here's what you need to know. The Maharam Meirutenberg was one of the last of the Baalei HaTosfos. Okay, he's Ashkenaz, he's France, he's Germany. He's the Gadol Hador. He's Germany, I'm sorry, not France. Well, Germany and France. Okay, he's the Gadol Hador in the, you know, in the early 1200s. Around when Rudolf, the emperor of the Romans, he was called, you know, started being tough on Jews. And the Maharam tried to escape because life was not good for Jews. A lot of people tried to escape. The Maharam was caught and imprisoned. So just understand, he's the Gadol Hador. He's in prison. Now an unbelievable thing happens. The Ramban has a Talmud, Rabbeinu Asher, the Rush. Okay? The Rush is well known, but he's the Talmud of the Maharam Meirutenberg. The Rush is exceptionally wealthy. The Rush's father was a big Talmud Chacham, but also very rich. He has money. He has money to ransom his Rebbe, the Gadol Hador, the Maharam Meirutenberg, from jail. His money, he raised other money. They have a massive amount of money. And here, really one of the most amazing things in the history of Halacha happens. The Maharam from prison paskins that it's usher to ransom him. Okay, this isn't like a theoretical psak. The Maharam is in prison. They raise all this money to ransom him, and the Maharam says no. Why not? Because the halacha is, if it's just going to encourage this behavior going forward, if they understand that if they kidnap and put in jail, you know, the next person, they'll also get paid, that's against the halacha. So first of all, there was never a more selfless psak halacha in the history of halacha than the Maharam in jail saying no. Now, if you think it was just for a short period of time, no. The Maharam spent the last 7 years of his life in jail, refusing to be ransomed by the community out of fear that this would set a precedent. This issue comes up every once in a while in Israel. Sadly, it comes up more often than you would like. For example, in the Gilad Shalit. You remember his name, right? So Gilad Shalit, you know, it was enormous pressure to ransom him. In the end, we did. But that was when people talk about what seems obvious, which is if you ransom, you know, if you free 1,000 terrorists to get back Gilad Shalit, doesn't that incentivize them to try to kidnap more soldiers? And the answer is undoubtedly it does. And it certainly, you know, would have been against the Maharam's psak. Unbelievably, they were so angry to not get the ransom for the Maharam that they kept his body for 14 years after he died. Till some guy whose name escapes me, he doesn't matter, he ransomed the body for a large amount of money. Obviously, the Maharam couldn't object at that point, on condition that he'd be buried next to the Maharam. And you could go on the internet, the cemetery in Worms in Germany, there's the Maharam and this guy who ransomed his body from jail to have proper Jewish burial. Now, let's go back to the Rush. The Rush was a huge Talmud Chacham. He was the Talmud Muvak of the Maharam, Meirutenberg, and he had 8 sons. We'll come back to this. The third of the Rush's sons became the Tur. So you see, the Maharam Meirutenberg is the Rebbe, the Rush is the Talmud, the Rush's son will become the Tur, and we'll get to that in a minute. The Rush, we don't know that much about the Rush early on in Germany. There was this something that was called the Rheinfleisch massacres, in which plenty of Jews were killed, and the Rush kind of took a leadership role after communities were wiped out. He helped distribute property. He helped with Yerusha. That's really where he made his name. Okay, but then the most important thing in the history of halacha happens. The Rush looks around and says, well, if they could kidnap the Maharal Meirutenberg, I'm next. I can't stay here. I can't stay in Ashkenaz. I'm a target because this is what's going on. So the Rush, you know, to us, traveling is a normal thing. But in those days, you know, Ashkenaz and Sfard, let's say, you know, France and Germany on the one side and Spain on the other, they were two different worlds, and there was no connection between them. But the Rush, in running away from Germany, goes to Spain. And he becomes, you know, so first of all, he's not just any guy, he's the Rush. When he gets there, the Rashba tells everybody, he's the Gadol Ador. And he becomes kind of like the chief rabbi. So he's the first person, you know, who starts in Ashkenaz and lands up in Sfard. And this is enormous for the development of halacha, because all of a sudden the two worlds come together. The Rush saw plenty of things in Sfard that he didn't like. There's a legend, I could not find any source for it, but I feel like I heard it from somebody who should know, that when the Rush came, he met frum people who didn't put on tefillin. Why? They were so machmir on gufnaki, right? I have to have proper kavanah, I have to have cleanliness. It was better to not put on tefillin. The Rush was like, this is insane. And, you know, we never met a frum person in our lives who didn't put on, who was so frum, he didn't put on tefillin every day. Right? But the Rush apparently met people like this, opposed it. Okay? This becomes like a really, really big moment in halacha, because all of a sudden, you know, Ashkenazi minhagim and Sfardi minhagim come together in one person. Okay. Who was the Rush? The Rush, we would say in our terms, was a Haredi. Like, flat out against secular knowledge, against any education, you know, which made it a problem, because when he came to Spain, they were into philosophy, they were into secular studies. They loved things like the Mor Nevuchim. He wanted to asser secular studies, the Rush, but they told him basically, you can't. You know, you're going to get run out of town. There's a limit to what you can do. I don't know. I suspect it's a reaction to the Rambam, but I can't tell you for sure. Maybe it's persecution from the church. You know, if you live with anti-Semitism, your instinct is Torah and only Torah, because anything else, you know, smacks of the outside world, smacks of the church. But he was, you know, very much against anything outside of Torah. Okay, what did the Rush write? He wrote the Rush, I guess you would say, you know. What is the Rush? The Rush is similar to the Rif. Right? The Rush wrote on Masechtos. He wrote a halachic work, but it gives you background. So, for example, the Rif, who came first, never met the Rambam, never knew any Balei HaTosfos. But the Rush, who came later, you know, could include all this in his work. He could include sources, he could include dissenting opinions, things the Rambam didn't try to do. He did not try to set up his own system of classification. He just went by Masechtos, like the Rif, right? If you want to find the Rush on something, how does the Rush paskin, you got to know where the Gemara is, because otherwise you won't get it. I guess you could word search, but in the old days, right, you know, the Rambam, you want to know how the Rambam paskins, well, you know his system of classification, so you can start from scratch and try to feel your way through it. But the Rush, like the Rif, just wrote on Masechtos. That's where the halachas come from. Okay. His son, who later on wrote the Torah, his son Yaakov, made a digest called Piskei HaRash. So if you come across it, it's just a digest of the Rush, but without all the discussions, it just gives the bottom line halachas. Okay. Interestingly, despite the fact that I think it's fair to say that the Rush was a Haredi and was very into tradition, and this is how we do it, and we're not going to change, the Rush, unlike the Ramban, didn't think we were bound by Minhagim of the Gaonim, right? The Gaonim existed between Gemara and Rishonim. And the Ramban thought if the Gaonim said something, it was binding. The Rush thought not. The Rush thought the Gemara is binding, but for example, he thought the Nusach HaTfilah that was handed down from the Gaonim he thought if it was wrong, he was allowed to disagree with it, and if he didn't like it, he could, you know, he could put it aside, because we're not bound by it. Okay? He was seen as a big machmir, whatever that means. The real impact of the rush is felt later in the Shulchan Aruch. Anybody know what the rules are for Psak Halacha? And the Mechaber tells you in the introduction to Shulchan Aruch, this is how he paskins. Anybody know what the rules are? Huh? Good. He says, Rif first, then Rambam, then the Rush. I will paskin like two out of the three. That's what the Mechaber says. For the most part, he sticks with it. There are exceptions. What's interesting is that, and we'll come back to this when we do the Mechaber, he stacked the deck. What do I mean? Huh?
It's all very Sephardi.
Well, the Rif from North Africa, he's a Sephardi. The Rambam, clearly a Sephardi. And even the Rush, who's from Ashkenaz, spent the last years of his life in Sephard. So when the Rama came, you know, to be Masig on the Shulchan Aruch or on the Mechaber, he said, as all Ashkenazim said, it's not really fair, right? You stack the deck in favor of Sephardim. But the Rush was, you know, to get a sense for the Rush's influence and his reputation, he was up there. You know, it was the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush were thought of as the three great poskim amongst Rishonim, or certainly amongst early Rishonim. As a work you should know, you know, one of the problems is when you're one of the Balei HaTosos, you don't really write anything under your name. King Maharam Rittenberg wrote many tshuvas, and he gets quoted many, many times by the Rama. But we don't really know who wrote the Tosfos on a particular Masechta. The Balei HaTosos, there were so many of them. Sometimes you know. There is Tosfos HaRush. Tosfos HaRush, I could tell you, is, aside from the fact that the Rush wrote it, is a great cheating tool. I found over time that when you don't understand a Tosfos, it's often the case that Tosfos HaRush says the same thing, but in more words and in clearer terms. And so, you know, when I was in yeshiva, I used Tosfos HaRush as like, you know, like as a cheating tool to understand the Tosfos on the daf. Because they're often the same topics. You know, somebody decided, an editor decided whose Tosfos gets put on the page. But Tosfos HaRush, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, there's a bunch of Tosfos in different Masechtos. I feel like Tosfos HaRush is really, really helpful to get to the bottom of whatever the Tosfos says on our page. Okay. This gets us now where we wanted to go, to the Rush's son, the Tur. Again, the Rush had eight sons. Most of them died young in pogroms and things like that. His third son was called Rabbi Yaakov Baal HaTurim, okay, 1275 to 1340. Why is he called the Baal HaTurim? Because he wrote a work called, technically, the Arba'at Turim, right? We just call it the Tur. Now, what's the most important thing about this work called the Arba'at Turim? Anybody know? Yeah. Correct. He doesn't follow the Rambam. He doesn't follow the Rambam's classification for a number of reasons, mostly because he only wrote Halacha L'maisa. So there's no Karbanos, there's no Beis HaBechira, there's no Milchama. Tons of the, you know, the Rambam wrote on Kol HaTorah Kula. The Tur said, no, what we need now is a Halacha Sefer that governs, you know, our lives and what we do. So he's the first person to come up with the four-part classification, which we use to this day, because his classification was then copied verbatim by the Mechaber. Right? So Shulchan Aruch, except for one siman, if the Tur in Arba'at Turim deals with Hilchos Kriya Shema in siman Chet, that's where it's going to be in Shulchan Aruch. Right, the Mechaber, and then following him, the Rama, simply copied the Tur's framework and the actual numbering of the Simanim. Everybody with me? So that, you know, so that categorization of Halacha started with the Tur, which makes him, you know, an incredible influence on us. What are those classifications? First of all, what does Tur mean? Huh? Good. Where does it come from? What's the pasuk? Hatur ha'achad, v'hatur ha'sheni, right? That's the choshen. So he just picked, you know, it's a cool thing. He just picked that term, and it stuck. Okay. what are the four classifications? It's, we ought to just know this. To be Bnei Torah, we got to know these things. What's Or HaChaim? Huh? Okay, so that's going to include davening, Shabbos, Yom Tovim, Tzitzis, Tfilin, you know, brachos, right? And frankly, you know, if you had to say, that's the one that impacts us the most. Interestingly, the Rav thought that Or HaChaim is basically anything that's time-bound. We don't really think of it that way, but anything that's time-bound, it's daily, it's weekly, it's monthly, it's a holiday, it's yearly, that goes in Or HaChaim. It's helpful to know when you're looking for something, that's Or HaChaim. Okay, what's next? Choshen Mishpat. What's Choshen Mishpat? Anybody? Civil law. That's what Choshen Mishpat is. Civil law. Business disputes, compensation for damages, etc. Okay, what's next? What's the easy one that's left? Eben HaEzer. What's Eben HaEzer? Marriage and divorce, right? You guys, everybody, you're learning Subos, you're living in Eben HaEzer. Yoredeya then de facto becomes like a catch-all. If you don't go in Or HaChaim, because it's not calendar-based, and you don't go in Eben HaEzer, because it's not marriage-based, and you don't go in Choshen Mishpat, because it's not a business dispute, you land up in Or HaChaim. In Yoredeya. What's that? Kashrus, Nida, Avelos, Ribbis, things that don't belong in any other categories. Okay? You know, Nida, Yoredeya seems like the thing you learn if you want to get Smicha, but it's backwards, because they don't belong anyplace else. So they went into Yoredeya. Okay. What's the tour like? Yeah?
It seems pretty similar to the Shasis. Like, Rapha Moed is the first one. Nezikin is
okay. Okay.
And all that would go under Eben
HaEzer. Okay.
And everything else would be.
Okay. You may be onto something. Look, it has to work. I mean, when the tour sat down to make a classification, it had to make sense. So you're right. Maybe he looked at it and said, it's an interesting idea. Maybe he looked at it and said, Moed, I'll stick in Or HaChaim. But it doesn't really work that way because brachos and benching and all these things that don't really go in Moed. It's not going to be perfect anyway. The Rambam doesn't match up with anything either. Yeah. So, you know, I have no reason to disagree with you. I think it's a really good point. What does the tour look like? I think we don't learn tour as much as people used to. If you open up a tour, what do you find? What you find is, and once you start, you won't stop, because it's good for cheating. He gives you everything you need to be smart. He starts with the Gemara, right? The text of the tour is much, much longer than the text of Shulchan Aruch. If you took away all the notes, say Kalim, the Shulchan Aruch is really tiny. Okay, it's a digest. The tour is not the digest. The tour starts with the Gemara, you know, goes with various explanations and their halachic implication. It cites Gaonim, it cites Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Now, the problem with the tour, or the reason why maybe his psak is limited, is because who does the tour always paskin like? His father. Seems like a halacha to be, you know, right? You want to be do kibud avaim. So if you weren't a fan of the rush, then you're probably not going to be a fan of the tour, right? When you announce in advance, I'm going to always paskin like my father, so to a certain extent, it limits your influence, because his father was very, very well respected, but he was still his father. But what really happened with the tour, aside from his classification system, is that the tour became a primary text that everything afterwards was based on. Every significant halachic work in the 200 years after the tour wrote, so we're talking, you know, from the middle of the 1300s, basically till the 1500s, was a commentary on the tour. When the Mechaber wrote his magnum opus, which was? No. The Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is what? A commentary on the tour. When the Rama wrote his magnum opus, don't get this wrong, what's it called? Darche Moshe. He wrote it on the tour, right? The Bach wrote on the tour. The tour became the halachic text after the Rambam on which every single thing was based. So it's critical to have any understanding of halacha and how halacha plays out to know that the Tor made up the classification system. The Tor paskin like his father, but he's kind of like a direct descendant of Ashkenaz, of the Maharam Rutenberg and the Rush, except once the Rush moved to Spain and, you know, became exposed to Sephardi practices and Sephardi halachos, you know, the Rush was like the linchpin for making the Tor so popular. Because the Tor, you know, everybody knows the Mechaber is Sephardi, the Rama is Ashkenazi, and each one lives in their own world and is the final say in their own world. But because the Tor followed his father and his father moved from one place to the other, he had a better chance of being universally accepted. Because you're right, he's going to always pass it like his father, but it's not like instinctively Ashkenazim go, that's not me. Because instinctively Ashkenazim go, oh, yeah, he came from Ashkenaz, he's me. But Sfarim go, oh, he lived in Spain, he's also me. So the Rush was right in between, and therefore his son was widely accepted. There was no competing work to the Tor. He wrote it, it was accepted, not necessarily as the final word, you know, but because it's possible to have a Seder. And like if you sit down and learn Rambams, you're just getting yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Okay, I'm not undermining that. I'm just saying that's what you're getting. If you sit down and learn the Tor, you feel like there's lumdus. You feel like you're in a sugya. You feel like he's giving you the stuff that you need. You know, if you're preparing a chabura on something, and you want to be smart and get things quickly, but you don't want to cheat completely by like going to Encyclopedia Talmudic, you go to the Tor. Later, you can go to the Beis Yosef. You know, you can't make a chabura from the Rambam, because he just gives you the bottom line. He doesn't even tell you what the sources are. But the Tor says, here's what the Gemara says, here's what the Mefarshim on the Gemara says, here's what I think the halacha is. And you could create a lot from that. Question or not? Do you have your head up? You did, but you didn't mean to. Now, the fact is you had your hand up. You don't stretch like a referee in the NFL. Nah, I don't. Okay, fine. Anyway, it's going well. All right. Let me end with the following. I had a friend, and this is kind of an insight into halacha generally. I had a friend, a bit of a mechutzah, who learned in this yeshiva. He was in law school, and he met Rav Lichtenstein at the yeshiva dinner, and he said to him something I would never have said. You know, like, I only have an hour a day to learn. What should I learn? So Rav Lichtenstein said to him, you should learn Tor. You know why? Because then you get lumdus, and you get the Gemara, and you get the Mefarshim, and you feel like you're into learning. And he said, yeah, but we don't paskin like the Tor. And Rav Aaron said, wouldn't be so bad if we paskin like the Tor. Now, here's the point I want to make, and we'll end with this, but it's important. We think, when we look at halacha, and we think about halacha, we think if we look hard enough, or we read enough, we're going to get the answer. There's going to be a correct answer to this halacha question. And I think what Rav Lichtenstein was getting at, what he believed deeply for himself, is that, no, there's a range of answers. Like if you say to somebody, you know, you ask me, I forgot Yalav Yavo and Rosh Chodesh, I have to repeat Shmona Esrei. So if I said to you, well, the Tor says, you'd go, but his position in halacha is as important as the position of other poskim, right? The idea that there's one book. You grew up in a world where, like, you're convinced that if Art Scroll put out a book, right, so that's the bottom line. They did all the research, that's the bottom line. But it's not true now. It was never the case. Of course there are questions in halacha where the answer is clear and there's a consensus and this is the halacha. But you have to start living in a world where, you know, we love halacha, we're insiders about halacha, and we understand that there's a range of possible psakim on certain issues. And to think for a second that, oh, he's the Tor, I don't have to listen to him. Why? The Tor was the Gadol Hador at the time. You know, he was the Rosh's son. He was the continuation of the development of halacha. He was the basis for everything that came after. Of course we have to care what the Tor paskins. It's not like the Mishnah Berurah is more important than the Tor. It's a world we have to get comfortable with. It's a world we have to get comfortable with in the sense that there's a certain Mesorah in Ashkenaz, a certain Mesorah in Sfarad, and that's true. But there are many, many things for which there's no Mesorah. And it doesn't mean you get to decide what the halacha is. But the idea that, you know, I just have to look for the bottom line, I think it undermines our relationship with halacha. And I think the tour is a great example of learning a sugya where he gives you the bottom line halacha. It's true. But in many ways for us, the greatness of the tour is just his knowledge and how much he gives you that allows you to, you know, to get into a sugya the way you might not have otherwise. Okay? This afternoon, Rav Moshe is giving a sicha after mincha on Prozbul. You don't need it because you went to Rav Mordechai's chug. But he's got things about how the yeshiva wants to do it. Depending on how long he goes, we'll have halacha afterwards or not. My sense is he's going to go for a while. But you should try to listen. Yeah.